to throw. Has time over the middle, intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20, needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time, Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up, deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz, 35, 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown Giants!
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up, gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul to the 10, to the 5, touchdown Giants!
There goes Wilson again, trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right, needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5, touchdown Giants! 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Give us your questions and comments. We will get to them on the air. Obviously, week one of the NFL regular season has officially begun. The 2013 NFL regular season had officially begun with the Broncos getting some form of payback for their loss in the AFC Championship game last year, dominating the Baltimore Ravens on Thursday night. Of course, the Giants getting ready to take on the Dallas Cowboys in Big D on Sunday evening. The Giants have won all four games against the Cowboys in what's now called AT&T Stadium, was previously called Cowboy Stadium. The Cowboys, I'm sure, very excited to finally claim a home game against the New York Football Giants. Good morning. We're joined this morning by Lance Meadow. Lance, how you doing, pal?
Doing well, John. How's everything
with you? You're a little chippy today, from what I understand.
I'm amped up. I'm on a little lack of sleep, but I'm ready to go.
I got my little violin out for you, Meadow.
I can tell. Yeah,
but
I know.
We are all excited for the weekend. Obviously, first weekend of the regular season is a lot of fun. Giants taking on the division rival Cowboys. And it's going to be a very difficult game for the Giants. We talked about the motivation factor for Dallas trying to get that first home game win against the Giants. But we've seen in those four wins the Giants have had in Dallas, they've come in fewer than 20 combined points. I believe it's been 3, 4, 5, and 6, the three-point total differentials in those four games. So the Giants are going to have their hands full, both teams with some strengths, with some weaknesses, but no better way to start the season than Giants and Cowboys.
This is one of the best rivalries in all of football, so I wholeheartedly agree with you, John. I think it's great that these two teams are starting out, though they are still getting a feel for one another. Last season, as you touched on, we had two competitive matchups. The Giants built that huge lead the last time they were in Dallas. Tony Romo had trouble holding on to the football and also finding his own teammates.
Six giveaways for the Cowboys in that game.
And then it came down to the Dez Bryant finger. In terms of them losing that contest, Dallas nearly pulled that remarkable comeback, but they wound up falling short. So the Cowboys are going to present a big challenge for the Giants because you have Dez Bryant, who is a very physical receiver, and this is going to be an opportunity for Prince Amukamara, who will probably get his fair share of looks at Dez, to see if he can carry his production from the preseason into the regular season. I think the one strength in this secondary, or the one player at least, John, that made a name for himself, was very aggressive, stepped it up a notch, is Prince Amukamara, and he is going to be put to the test on Sunday against this Dallas wide receiver corps.
Well, we'll see how the Giants match up their corners, too. I think that's still a little bit of a question. I'm not sure if the Giants are going to just leave one guy on each side of the field. Are they going to match up guys individually? And let's be honest, whomever they do match up with Dez Bryant, he's not going to do it alone because no one does it alone against Dez Bryant.
You definitely need help.
Simply too talented. So the Giants are certainly going to have a safety over the top. They'll have some of their linebackers in the middle of the field as well to make sure Dez Bryant does not beat them. But looking past Dez Bryant, Jason Witten in that matchup last year, 18 catches for over 100 yards against the Giants. And for the first time in 3 years, Miles Austin has not had a leg or hamstring injury in the preseason, which is also obviously a big factor. If you have to give all that attention to Dez Bryant, Miles Austin can get you. We saw 2 years ago in that Jason Pierre-Paul blocked field goal game, who made the two big catches to get the Cowboys down the field to be in position to kick the field goal? That was Miles Austin. And then you have rookie third-round pick Terrence Williams, who has shown the ability to get deep in the preseason. So we talked about a lot of weapons, and the Giants are going to have to get to Tony Romo. That's if they're good to me. If the Giants are going to win this game, they're going to win it up front because where the Cowboys have their issues is on the offensive and defensive lines. We'll get to the defensive line in a second, but it looks like they're going to go with their configuration. Doug Free, right tackle. Right guard is going to be Bernadeau. Left guard is going to be Livings. The center is the rookie Travis Frederick. Then, of course, Tyron Smith at left tackle. And that's a group that's only played, I believe, one preseason game together this year. Leary just got back to practice on Wednesday. Doug Free struggled last year. There's no question about that. That's no mystery. They have weaknesses, and that's if the Giants, to me, are going to win this game. They're going to win it against the Cowboys' offensive line, especially getting pass pressure from those interior defensive tackles up the middle.
Yeah, that's the one area that the Giants need to take advantage. And whether JPP is 100%, whether he plays or not, the Giants still have enough weapons that they should be able to fluster Tony Romo. However, now keep in mind, Tony Romo is still very good even if he runs out of the pocket. But you want to make it as uncomfortable as possible for Romo. You want to get him on the run. Force him to throw the ball as he moves towards the sideline, because then he's prone to turning the ball over, which we saw last season in Dallas and at times even outside of the Giants game. So I think that's the priority number one. Try to get to Romo, do it more often than not, test this Cowboys offensive line. There's a lot of talk about Justin Pugh, but as you mentioned, Travis Frederick's getting his first taste of an NFL regular season start.
And you know, the center's a lot of responsibilities. It's not blocking the man in front of him. It's calling out protections. It's reading with the quarterback who that Mike linebacker is, figuring out who is to block who. So, yeah, the Cowboys have a rookie center out there as well. And with everything Perry Fuel does, with the stunting, rotating, and defensive tackles, that's going to be a huge challenge for the young man.
They've had issues at center even before Frederick took over.
Frederick can at least snap the ball.
Correct. That
Phil Costa and company in the past, not necessarily.
That is a step in the right direction in terms of Frederick being able to comfortably hand the ball off to Tony Romo. And the bottom line is they also have some healthy running backs this time. So that's going to pose somewhat of a challenge to the Giants compared to what Dallas showcased last season, because DeMarco Murray was on the sideline quite often, and now they have Joseph Randall and Lance Dunbar. Dunbar's been battling an injury, but there's a little bit more depth, I'd say, in the Dallas backfield than in seasons prior.
Yeah, the Cowboys, I think, only had one hard rusher, I think, only twice last year. One of those was DeMarco Murray against the Giants week number one when the Cowboys beat the Giants, and they are a much better team when they get balanced. They were the second worst rushing team in football last year in terms of yards per game. The yards per carry were way under four, and that's because DeMarco Murray was hurt much of the year. So they hope to get more out of him. They're one more year into Bill Callahan now being their offensive line coach, now also their play caller and offensive coordinator, and they use much more of a zone blocking scheme now than they did when Hudson Hauk was there as their offensive line coach. You see a lot more stretch plays, and they'll mix it up. I want to throw one nugget out there that I got on Tony Romo in terms of the Giants getting to him. In his career with Dallas, in Giants wins versus Dallas compared to Giants losses versus Dallas, in wins, the Giants averaged about 9.6 sacks and hits combined against Romo's in wins. In losses, they averaged only 4.8. So that's twice as many hits and sacks and wins. It just shows how important it is to get to the quarterback and put Tony Romo on his back.
And that's why they beefed up that defensive line this offseason, John, so that if JPP's not 100%, they can at least toy with a variety of different guys. And I think it's also key for the defensive tackles to get pressure on the interior, because there's weaknesses all over the place on the Cowboys' offensive line. But this could be a game where Cullen Jenkins, Linville Joseph can really try to keep Tony Romo contained and force him to make plays, whether it be by dropping back or running out of the pocket. Because as you just threw out those numbers, if you get Romo rattled and you do it throughout the course of this game, he is at least going to walk away with two interceptions. And if the Giants win the turnover battle, Tom Coughlin always says this, that's probably the easiest route to a victory.
We are taking your calls on Big Blue Kickoff Live, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Plenty to talk about Giants and Cowboys coming up on Sunday Night Football. Lance, let's jump to the other side of the ball. The other place where the Cowboys have some injury issues and could be considered a weakness is their defensive line. It does not look like Anthony Spencer is going to play at left end. We know Jay Ratliff's not going to play at defensive tackle. He's still on the PUP list. So you have DeMarcus Ware at right end. We know how good he is. And then, of course, you have George Selvey, who's stepping in for Spencer, and Nick Hayden, who's stepping in for Jay Ratliff. Clearly two names that are not household names. George Selvey's kind of bounced around this league a lot. So is Nick Hayden. Not exactly difference makers. Jason Hatcher is a good defensive tackle. But, again, another place where the Giants should be able to take advantage. Get the running game going a little bit. Get David Wilson involved. We know how good the Cowboys linebackers are, Bruce Carter and Sean Lee. They have two very good effective cornerbacks. Their safeties are better. But that Cowboys defensive line, in terms of the Giants running the football and protecting Eli Manning, they should be able to do both those things as they move forward on Sunday night.
And you may see a little bit of Darrell Scott to at least give David Wilson a rest here or there. I know Kevin Gilbride hinted at that. He wasn't going to give you an exact number in terms of the breakdown of snaps, but this is going to be a game, I agree with you, that could play right into the hands of the Giants running game,
yeah,
and should also play into the hands of the passing game, because if they can't get to Eli Manning consistently, he has enough weapons that if the Giants go three wide and you include Brandon Myers in the mix, there's no reason why there shouldn't be openings in the middle of the field. And that's another way to test this linebacker core, because I think you would agree, John, if there's any strength to this Cowboys defensive unit, to me at least, it's probably the linebackers.
To me, linebackers number one and the corners are a pretty far second, to be honest with you.
But it's going to be interesting to see how the corners produce because of the new scheme. This is not that man-to-man coverage anymore.
Correct.
They're being creative with the Tampa 2 in that new 4-3 scheme. So Sean Lee, Bruce Carter, on paper also with Justin Durant, who came over from the Lions. You know, they've got a nice mix there in terms of the interior. But if the defensive line doesn't get pressure, that's going to put an awful lot of pressure on that linebacker core to help in terms of coverage and also to stop the run.
And if they can't stop the run up front, play action pass, sucks the linebackers in, opens up all sorts of things down the field. Let's go to our phone calls. We have plenty more to talk about. 201-939-4513. Let's start with Carlos in Virginia. Carlos, good morning. How are you, pal?
Hey, how are you? How are you?
We're doing all right, Carlos. What's up?
Yeah, with Andre Brown being out for a couple of weeks, is the Giants going to look to, finding a veteran running back?
Well, Carlos, the key right now, if the Giants would have signed the veteran running back this year, anybody with more than 4 years of accrued experience, he has a guaranteed contract for the entire season. So they'll wait till after this week. They'll comb the waiver wire. But they'll also give Darrell Scott a chance in this game with whatever playing time he gets. I don't think it's going to be a ton. He won't get 15 carries. Maybe he'll get 5, 6, or 7. If he can show that he can be an effective runner and do the other things like pass protect and catch balls out of the backfield and not fumble the football, which has been his biggest problem, he might have a chance to earn, at least until week 8 when Andre Brown's eligible to come back, a spot on this roster as David Wilson's backup. So you won't see a move this week, but depending on how Darrell Scott does, you might see one next week.
Yeah, I kind of figured because of Andre Brown, being that he's a better, protector, as far as, on third down situations, I figured that, they would find, the veteran back, to kind of, cover up that piece for a little bit until he gets back, would make a lot of sense.
But, well, keep in mind, though, David Wilson has improved in that category compared to where he was at this point last season.
Yeah, Kevin Gilbride had great things to say about him yesterday.
Been much more aggressive in terms of challenging the blitz as opposed to stepping back and waiting for it to come to him. So I think that's at least a positive for the Giants.
Yeah, I believe he'll have a breakout season. I really do. They think he's going to have a breakout season. Maybe, he might have 1,000 yards under his belt this season also.
The only thing, Carlos, that's holding David Wilson back, and it might not, is his ability to carry a full load for 16 games. And we haven't seen him do it. I think he can, but we don't know until we can actually see him do it. He certainly has the explosive running ability to be an elite back in this league.
Okay. All right, well, thank you for your time.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Carlos. We appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Back to our phone. Let's go to William in New Jersey. William, what's going on, Pally?
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing right. Well,
doing
what's
well,
up?
Good, good. I just had a quick question. Throughout last year, our defensive ends did not contain the outside.
Also so did not times, get to the quarterback, both.
Exactly. So how do you think we'll do this year with Tuck and Jenkins actually keeping the contain, in regards to this division with these fast tailbacks and quarterbacks who could exploit that?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's very important for them to do it. And you're right, they didn't do a great job of it last year. The Cowboys are going to challenge those edges, too. They ran a lot of stretch plays in the preseason. I watched two of their preseason games. They get off tackle an awful lot. So those defensive ends are going to have to be disciplined and give the linebacker some help to keep the linemen off of them to give them the opportunity to make some tackles.
Oh, okay. Just one quick thing. Regards to the over-pursuit on the safeties, I saw in one preseason game. I know Cooper Taylor really didn't get any playing time. And when he did, he missed the tackle big time. Now, in the event that they switch out, for substitutions and he's in, you think that would be a big issue regarding Dez Bryant going over the top and then, Cooper Taylor being worried about Witten coming through the middle?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't know how much time Cooper Taylor is going to see in this game. I think that they'd probably lean more towards a Aaron Ross or a Terrell Thomas if they wanted to go more to that three safety alignment. I mean, because keep in mind, as you touched on, Cooper Taylor only played in that Patriots game. He's still trying to get back to full strength in terms of that hamstring injury. So I don't know how many snaps he will see against the Dallas Cowboys. He's better, I think, against the run because of his size, and they can bring him up towards the box, and he has to get used to the full speed of the NFL because of his limited action here. So I wouldn't be too overly concerned. I think when in doubt, they'll probably go more towards the experienced corners and have them rotate within the safety.
William, Lance is 100% correct. The days of the three safety packages ended when Stevie Brown got hurt. They're just not going to do it a lot. You're going to see Aaron Ross, and you're going to see Terrell Thomas, and you're going to see Jaron Hosley, if he's healthy, play that slot corner position, and you're going to have Ryan Mundy and Antro Roll on the back end of the field playing that deep safety spot in nickel packages. The days of three safeties are over, and it's fine. Your better players this year are at cornerback. Last year, your better players were at safety, so you played three of them. This year, your better talents at cornerback, so you're going to see more traditional nickel packages than what you saw in 2012. And I think that's fine. I don't think that's a problem.
Right, right. All right, well, thank you, guys. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. I know a lot of people got, you know, very excited about the three safety package, but the only reason you did that is because Antro Roll was a better slot corner than the cornerbacks on your roster. Now that you have guys that you can bring in that can play that slot corner spot, and that's why Terrell Thomas' health is so important, that's why it was important to bring back Aaron Ross, there's no need. You did three safeties out of need, not out of because, you know, you wanted to do it. You want Antro Roll at safety. This is a good thing that you don't have to use three safeties.
And you were questioning also the linebacker core last season, too. That's why Perry Fuel went to the three safeties. But you bring up an excellent point, John. If you hold up the rosters from last season and this season, there's a lot more depth and a lot more consistency at that corner spot. You didn't have Terrell Thomas. Aaron Ross is back, so that's another guy you couldn't turn to. And Jaron Hosley has another year under his belt. That's a lot more experience to toy with.
Better players. 201-939-4513. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, good morning. How you doing, Pally?
Good morning. Good morning. Listen, first thing, I got to apologize to Lance. I inadvertently, it's totally on me, but I inadvertently called him John through a whole phone call last week.
That's right. I appreciate it, Len. Yeah, that was real painful. Okay. I still needed a couple of days to recover.
Now, in fairness, Len, he also put that on his resume reel, so when he sends it out, people will actually think he's John Schmelk. So that it's okay.
And
okay,
clearly
totally
it's got to be
me.
so far.
Okay, that's totally on me. You guys do a great job. I got it, as you know, I've said this before, 34-20 Giants. Now, how do we hold the Cowboys to 20 points? Well, you know, we got to get the ball out of their hands. We got to get them to punt at least six times. Hold them to under 100 yards rushing. Hold those tight ends to no more than eight catches. I mean, if Witten catches 18 again, we're in deep and serious trouble. And, you know, hands up along the defensive line. I'd like to see three, maybe four tips. See that ball up in the air, somebody in blue running under it and picking it off. And I think, I think we can score 30 points on this team. And, I think we can hold them to 20, and I think we're going to win this ball game. And I don't have much else to say except, meet those goals, and I think we got it.
Hey, Len, and one other big number I'll give you. Don't necessarily worry about how many times you force the Cowboys to punt. Worry about how many takeaways that you get. And I'll drop a nugget on you from last year. The Giants, in their 9 wins last year, had 30 takeaways. In their 7 losses, they had 5.
Wow.
If you take the ball away, you win.
That's a great stat. Yeah, what we as the coach always says, you got to win the turnover battle.
Yep.
Let's hope we don't have too many, and it's easy to win the turnover battle.
That's the name of the game.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it's a great time. Opening night, football night in America. It's going to be. I think it's going to be terrific. I think we come out of there with a win. And hey, let's go Giants.
Hey, appreciate the call, Len.
Take care.
And one other nugget. I want to save some of these for the pregame show on Sunday, but
yeah,
they keep
coming up.
Yeah, apparently
using up all your material.
No,
here. I'd be careful.
I can bring.
I'm just warning
you right
now.
I'm saving some stuff. Cowboys very similar last year. In their 8 wins, +4. In their 8 losses, -17. last year. They went 8-8. So well,
they were not a very good team in terms of compiling turnovers last season. They barely got any turnovers.
I believe second fewest in the league. I think they had about, what, 11 takeaways, I think, over the course of the year. And that's one of the reasons they switched their defensive alignment, because last year they're using now what was the Bears system, who led the league in takeaways in that camp. In that Tampa 2, where the first guy makes the tackle, second and third guy come in and try to strip the football. One of the reasons they got rid of Rob Ryan, he could not produce any takeaways.
And also, Rob Ryan liked to blitz a lot. And I think that they got tired of that very aggressive approach, because more often than not, the Cowboys were exposed in the secondary, considering they were decimated by injuries, specifically to their safeties last season. They lost Barry Church very early, and they just were never able to find anybody who could fill that void. So that's why they did switch to this 4-3 scheme that is dating back from the Bucs days with Monty Kiffin. You have Marinelli, who is also very familiar with that scheme, and they're going to try to mimic what the Bears did. The Bears were an opportunistic defense last season. They were tremendous in terms of stripping the football, as John just touched on. They were tremendous in getting in prime position to get interceptions. They also had good pressure packages to get to the quarterback. And despite the fact that Chicago missed the playoffs, you know, they won a lot of games last season solely based on their defense. I mean, keep in mind, Jay Cutler struggled. The offensive line couldn't protect him. I think the Cowboys have a better offense on paper than Chicago does. But if they get a lot more takeaways, they're going to be that more of a dangerous team this season.
I'm going to try to save some of my nuggets here.
Yeah, you're holding back. All of a sudden, the pages were turning. You were carefully observing what you had written down, and now all of a sudden I see you're backing away from that.
201-939-4513. I got to save something for the air on Sunday. I know we got a different audience, but I have to hold back a little bit here.
Well, you may have to do some more homework on Saturday, that airplane ride.
Homework's done.
Well, you may need to hit the books again.
Ed is in Houston, Texas. Ed, good morning.
Morning, guys. Big weekend coming. Boy, I woke up with a smile on my face this morning, and I thought if Manning did what he did last night, now if his brother can follow even half of that, I'll be a happy man.
So boy, Ed, you're a Giant fan that lives in Houston. You must hate the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, I can't. I couldn't put it into words. When I was in the Air Force, I was stationed at Shepherd for a while back in the late 70s in Wichita Falls. And you wouldn't believe how bad it can get. The kicker had a show. Landry had his show. They had the Dallas Cowboys Weekly. I can understand why they're brainwashed up there and why they just live and die with Cowboys. In fact, when I left Yonkers, I joined the Air Force, and this was back in the 70s. I had a chance in 80 to get a government job, and I had a choice of three places: Houston, Dallas, and Albuquerque. The sole reason why I did not pick Dallas is my experience at Shepherd Air Force Base 7 years earlier. I said, I can't live in the same town with those people. No. it's really bad. Anyway, let me get to what I was going to say. Yesterday I noticed that they restructured two contracts, both Weatherford and Snead.
Yeah.
Do you think that might be a prerequisite to something coming up next week to get them $5 billion under the cap?
I think the reason they did those two new renegotiations was to get under the cap for the start of the season after roster moves were made. And I think you're going to see eventually down the road Eli Manning get redone as well. I don't know when that's going to happen. But look, next year the Giants are actually in a pretty good cap situation from what I've seen. I haven't done a ton of research into it. But from what I've seen, they're actually in pretty good shape, especially with so many one-year contracts coming off of the books. So I think the Giants are done for now. They don't need to do anything else for this season since they've gotten under the salary cap. But I would not be surprised if Eli's deal gets redone or extended at some point, even during the regular season or shortly after the season is over.
Okay. Well, I thought maybe that might have something to do with the potential trade and doing a contract with another running back next week, but I guess not.
No, I'm guessing whoever they bring in next week, if they bring in anybody at all, will be a veteran minimum deal. And whoever they cut and they bring somebody else new in, that'll just fill that salary cap spot. So I think right now their cap for this year is okay. I don't think they're going to have to do anything else to free up any more room to bring in another running back. Because quite frankly, anybody on the street right now, they're really not in great negotiating position to, request much more than the veterans minimum, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've been a Giant fan for 42 years. I've been watching them pretty regularly since the second exhibition game in 1971. And I would be hard-pressed to come up with a cast of running backs for the opening week as weak as what they have now. And that's to take nothing away from Wilson, but the lack of depth and experience. I would have to go back to Bobby Tuhon and Rocky Thompson in 1971 to come up with as thin a cast as this. I mean, can you think of any other time when this team started this light as far as depth and experience?
I mean, Ed, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. If you can go back maybe as far as the late 90s when all they had was Tiki, I mean, but then you still had Dane there those years. You had Will Montgomery, I guess, was the primary backup 1 year. Yeah, I mean, usually the Giants are pretty deep at running back. It's been a while.
It's been a while since they've had to start a running back that's entering only his second year in the league. I mean, you've had Ahmad Bradshaw, you've had Brandon Jacobs at least to lean on, and then your depth was maybe a younger nucleus. Now, the fact that Andre Brown's hurt, you're relying on a Darrell Scott who has experience. It's not as if he just entered the NFL, but he's been hurt and he hasn't seen much playing time.
Yeah, I mean, how many – look it up, see if you can find that. How many regular season carries does Darrell Scott have?
We'll check
does
that
out. Does he have one?
I believe he does.
He doesn't have more than 10, I bet. 201-939-4513. Lance will check out that number. But we're going to stay in Houston, Texas, and say what's up to Chris this morning. Chris, what's going on, pal?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. You do a heck of a job. Hey. Also, I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening, Chris. We appreciate it.
A couple of comments and questions. First and foremost, is there any way we could give the Broncos the wrong address or the wrong direction to the stadium?
Don't worry about the Broncos. Just worry about diverting Peyton Manning, and I think that you'll be okay. Just worry about that one guy, and I think you can figure out the rest of the roster.
I hope so. I did appreciate what you said earlier about why we don't need as many safeties. I think you were spot on with that. But on the other side of the ball, I wanted to get your feedback on Michael Cox as well as Brandon Myers. As far as Cox, I like what little I've seen of him. I really, really like what I see. And it would not surprise me if he got a touch or two where he would impress us and do something special. I wanted to get your feedback on that, but also Brandon Myers. I wanted to see, you know, what's your thoughts about him? I don't expect him to get as many attempts as Martellus Bennett did, but do you think he could fill that void? Because it was a pretty quiet preseason.
I'll take Cox first, then Lance will handle Myers. Cox will be your primary kick returner, so he will get a lot of touches and a chance to make plays there. And, again, the Giants were pretty close-mouthed about who's going to be that backup running back to David Wilson. I think Darrell Scott will get some carries. Would I be surprised if they try to create some opportunities and space for Michael Cox on a draw play or a screen? That would not surprise me.
And he showed flashes of that in the preseason, so I agree with John. By the way, Darrell Scott, 11 career carries. You were close.
I went with the under.
He had 6 in 2012, 5 in 2011. But getting back to Brandon Myers, and you're right, he had a relatively quiet preseason. The tight ends overall had a relatively quiet preseason. Part of that may have been by plan. You know, remember, the Giants are not going to show everything that they've got in store. They can't afford to do that. So I think that part of it is Brandon Myers still learning the system. And remember, he also needs to accept his role as a blocker. If you're going to be a Giants tight end, it's not just about running routes. When he was with Oakland, his primary goal was to go out, run routes, be a security blanket for Carson Palmer. That's why he got 79 receptions last season. That was also because the Raiders didn't have many wide receivers that Carson Palmer could rely on. Here, Brandon Myers is surrounded by a great deal of talent, so he's not going to be in a position where he needs to have 79 receptions. He's going to have opportunities in the middle of the field, but his first priority needs to be that additional offensive lineman. So that's how they're going to start him off. And then I think as the season progresses, then you'll see his role as a pass catcher increase. Because keep in mind, Jake Ballard was relatively quiet when he first got his first opportunity, and Martellus Bennett did not all of a sudden make his presence felt. So it took some time.
I appreciate that feedback. How do you like his blocking skills as opposed to Martellus Bennett? Do you see it as a slight upgrade?
I think he has room for improvement.
I believe, honestly, from Martellus Bennett to Brandon Myers, I believe it's a legitimate downgrade by a good level. But Bennett was an excellent blocker. Myers is still trying to learn and get better. And I've seen some plays in the preseason on tape where Myers has struggled as a blocker. So I don't think you're going to see an improvement there. It'll balance out the improvement you see in the passing game. You're probably going to take a bit of a hit in the running game.
And know who I see the key to that passing game, the ace in this?
Who's
Ruben
that?
Randall.
All right, Chris, thanks for the call, man.
All right, take care, guys. Good
take
luck.
It easy. And I think Ruben Randall, and nobody's really talked about him since the first few weeks of camp, but, you know, the Cowboys have three corners, Scandrick, Claiborne, and Carr. When the Giants go three wideouts, they're going to move Cruz inside. Skandrick will cover him. You're probably going to have Brandon Carr and Akeem Nicks. And then Ruben Randle's hooked up with Morris Claiborne, who, look, we know about his talent, but he hasn't played in a preseason game with a knee injury. So he hasn't played a whole lot in the preseason. The Giants might try to take advantage of that and see how much rust he is to knock off in that first half.
You can make a point, John. The third wide receiver may actually be the difference maker in this contest for both teams. I mean, given all the attention that's going to go to Austin and Bryant and all the attention that's going to go to Nicks and Cruz, you know, Randle may have some favorable matchups, as you just laid out. And maybe this is a stretch, but a Cole Beasley or a Dwayne Harris, perhaps a
or
catch
Terrence
or two,
Williams.
Correct, could very well be the difference maker in a game like this. It may come down to that. One other thing I wanted to point out to Chris's point about the tight ends,
yeah,
where he asked, is it a downgrade going from Martellus Bennett to Brandon Myers in terms of the blocking? Remember, Martellus Bennett came from Dallas, where he was a backup tight end, and he also had a little bit more experience in blocking. Not a great deal of experience, but at least some. Brandon Myers is coming from a situation where his role in Oakland was to catch the football.
Correct.
So that's important to keep in mind. This is a big adjustment period for Myers, more so than for a guy like Martellus Bennett.
And he's working at it. He really wants to get better, but quite frankly, he just doesn't have the size. You look at Brandon Myers standing next to Martellus Bennett. I mean, it's not the same body type. Bennett, a much bigger, more physical guy than Brandon Myers, but he's trying to get better, but there is some work to be done still.
And there's some similarities you could build between David Wilson and Brandon Myers, because both players did not come from backgrounds
right,
where they were asked to pass protect.
True.
They're both small in stature compared to their given position, but the coaching staff likes the fact that they're willing to learn and they're open to improvement. So that's at least a positive for the Giants.
Never thought we'd have a show where I'd have two references to Albuquerque, New Mexico, but we do today, and let's go down to Jamal, who's there. What's going on, Jamal?
Hey, what's going on, folks? How y'all doing?
Hey, doing all right.
All right. The first thing I want to say is Dallas week. I'll be there this weekend.
Nice.
I'll fly out tomorrow morning to be there. I wanted to know, what was the barbecue spot y'all mentioned that y'all go to?
The barbecue place you got to hit, it's called Hard 8 Barbecue. It's not far from the airport. It's probably about a 15, 20-minute drive from the airport. Slow cook barbecue.
Okay.
They have it in the oven for like 24 hours. You can't beat
it.
Jamal, I'll put it this way. You pay for your meat by the pound. That's how good it is.
Wow.
And Jamal, John is going to be there from 5 to 6 Central Time on Saturday. He'll be signing his pamphlet that just was released, How to Survive a Flight with Paul Dottino. So make sure you stop by. John will be more than happy to greet you.
Hey, there we go. That's no problem. But also, I want to talk about, not to talk about the week ahead, but, man, we have 2 weeks ahead of us where we got to go against some tough receivers and tight ends, man. Denver Broncos don't look too bad. And I just hope our secondary can stay healthy so we can get past these Cowboys as well as do something the following week against the Broncos.
Well, Jamal, I'll tell you what. This is a heck of a way to start the season to test out your secondary. How much does Corey Webster have left? How much better has Prince Amukamara gotten? Can Ryan Mundy cover in the secondary? Can Anshar Roll, you know, create some better angles going after those deep balls? You could not have two better teams to test your secondary out against than the Cowboys and the Broncos. So you're going to learn a lot about the secondary the first 2 weeks of the year. And quite frankly, you're going to learn a lot about the pass rush too. Can they get to the quarterback the way they did when they were Super Bowl champions 2 years ago? It's a great test to start the season.
Great. Exactly. Thank you for the call. Thank you for allowing me to have the call, Phil. And like I said, Dallas week, I'll be there, and I'm excited.
Jamal, anytime, man. Thanks for calling in. Lance, that might have actually been the funniest thing I've ever heard
you
say.
Wow, I'm stunned. Normally, I'm patting you on the back, or you're patting yourself.
I mean,
on the
you
back.
Have really set the bar low, but that was actually pretty funny.
We try. You know, we throw some stuff out there. If it sticks, great. If not, we move on to new material.
201-939-4513. There is actually, and here's the key to surviving a flight with Paul Dottino.
Oh boy,
sit as far away from him as possible, because once you get close to him, you're done. I think Neely's gotten stuck next to Paul on a flight before. Doesn't shut up.
How fortunate.
He just keeps going. He doesn't sleep on the flight. The best, he puts some music on, and then what he likes to do to the music, he likes to kind of drum along while he's the headset on. He, like, bobs his head around. He's, like, hitting the scene in front of him with his pen. It's very exciting.
Now, is there some reading materials that he likes, or is he reviewing the legal pad and all the notes that he made?
You know what? I never really see Paul do a lot of work on the plane. Usually he's kind of there, like, trying to entertain himself. He doesn't really, like, hit the notebook. He isn't charting what the pilot's doing in the cockpit with the landing gear. Charting, you know, what everybody else is doing on the plane. There's none of that. His plane time seems to be his downtime.
And he's not high maintenance for the flight attendants?
No, he's not.
Okay.
He's not.
We're going to have to go a little bit more in depth.
I think we're done. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Steve down in Washington, D.C. Steve, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's happening, guys? Listen, I actually work. I was inside the city in Silver Spring, Maryland. So my office is full of half Redskin fans and half Raven fans. And, of course, you always have one or two Dallas fans in this area. But I'm just happy to see that not that necessarily that the Ravens lost, but Denver actually got a win. I don't want to come into us to look too hungry for a win, but definitely enjoyed that game last night and looking forward to the Giants game Sunday. But what I wanted to, you know, kind of hone in on this morning is basically what I think the sleeper is going to be on our team this week is going to be Lewis Murphy. I see him really exploiting those safeties, and I think we've kind of been, you know, keeping him in reserve this far in the preseason. But I think we have something big in store for him, and I just wanted to, you know, kind of get you guys' thoughts on that. And I'm just going to ask a couple questions, and I'll just kind of listen off air because I know I always go on and on every time I call. But, what I wanted to say is I think also the biggest difference is going to be our special teams. I'm hoping that's where we can utilize what I feel is one of our strengths. And I wanted to kind of, you know, get what your thoughts were about Ruben Randle returning punts. I really don't like that at all. And I'm just wondering, is there anybody else out there, you know, who we can put back there? And why do we consistently put our starters in those positions, especially given, you know, all these injuries that are happening lately? So, you know, if you guys don't mind, just kind of let me know what you think our biggest concerns are offensively and defensively. I'd really like to hear. I appreciate it. As always.
One more quick. Steve, what do you got? One more quick.
And I think, you know, the biggest key is obviously, you know, is stopping the run game. But I really feel good about a stopping the run game. And for some reason, I think Herzlick is going to really take advantage of his time, too. And of course, like everybody else, I just want to see some tempo to our offense. But I think we should walk away with a pretty easy victory. I wouldn't be surprised to see us beat them by 15 points.
All right, Steve. Appreciate the call, pal.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, Steve. Real quick on the punt return stuff, and I'll let you touch on Lewis Murphy, Lance. Randall's there because I think he's the most reliable guy catching it. That's number one. Number two, I think if Hosley was there and 100% healthy, I think he's still trying to get back from that ankle, I think that's the other guy that could do it. But Randall's not a starter. I mean, I realize he's going to play a lot as your third wide receiver, but Steve said you can't put your starters there. He's not a starter. Hosley's not a starter. I think those are your 1 and 1E guys. At punt return, if Hosley didn't hurt his ankle, I think he might be in the mix there with Randle to do punts.
Because Hosley has the ability to shed tackles and
make
do
people
some
miss.
Dancing. Exactly. Yeah. So I think that he showed flashes of that in the preseason, but the problem was you're dealing with the ankle injury. You want to keep the depth in the secondary. Why expose him to further aggravate the injury? Instead, you go with the guy that has the experience. And you're right. Reuben Randle is the third wide receiver. You now have Lewis Murphy. You have some other options so that, God forbid, somebody does suffer an injury, you can turn to another wide receiver. So that's why I think, based on paper and from a logistical sense, it makes sense to put Ruben Randle in that spot. But don't be surprised, Steve, if at the end of the day, you know, you see a little bit of Hosley as the season progresses. I don't know if they're sold, on Randle having the job for the entire season and taking every single punt. Just like we may see David Wilson on some kickoff returns. He may not necessarily have been removed completely from the equation. Granted, right now, you would say he probably is because he's the only reliable running back that they have in terms of the experience factor. But listen, if they need a groundbreaking play or somebody to provide a spark, given Wilson's game-changing ability, they could certainly turn to him once Andre Brown gets back. Steve also asked about the biggest concerns on defense and offense, at least heading into this game. Now, I think getting back to pressuring the quarterback, and we had hinted at that, is a must in this game. I mean, the sacks dropped off by about 15 last season. You know, that's a huge disparity.
And that goes hand-in-hand with stopping the big play, too. You put pressure on the quarterback with your front four. You don't have to blitz as much. You can keep your safeties deep. You stop the big play. And I think, look, the Cowboys are going to want to make big plays. They have Dez Bryant. They got Miles Austin. DeMarco Murray is a big play running back. The Cowboys are going to want to make some big plays down the field and make some splash plays here. The Giants have to prevent that. You want to make the Cowboys sustain long drives. You know they have the tendency to turn the ball over. So make them work for their scores. Don't let them get those big plays. That's what they want.
And in terms of stopping the run, like Steve, I feel a lot better heading into this season than last season. I think they've got the big bodies, John. You know, Sean Rogers, Linval Joseph, Cullen Jenkins.
As Perry Fuel said yesterday, they got the big butts.
That's right. Love that line. They know how to fill those holes.
The big butt defensive line.
Absolutely. You know, you can't complain. I mean, you've got a number of guys that you can rotate, and you can get inside, and you should be able to prevent these running backs from running wild into open space.
So we finally figured out the real reason that they let Chris Canty go. Not a big enough butt.
By the way, speaking of Chris Canty,
he had a nice game last night.
In all seriousness, he did have a good game, but maybe it's just me. He looks like a completely different guy.
Looks like he lost weight,
right?
Didn't he?
Absolutely. Very lean and slim compared to his days here with the
Giants. I mean, he was never big or fat, and I never considered him overweight when he was here by any means. He did seem to be a lot smaller when I saw him on the field last night, and I noticed that right away, too, when I saw him there. Maybe it was wearing the white Ravens uniforms. You know, I don't know, but it did look like he had shed some pounds. No question.
And speaking of a defense that has issues, not to get completely off topic, but the Ravens have some issues.
Well, they lost a lot of players in the offseason, a lot of linebackers. They lost Kerry Williams.
But they brought in a lot of good players, I thought, where they should have been able to pick up where they left off. I didn't think it was that big of an issue this offseason. They brought in Canty. You had, in terms of your secondary, you got Lardarius Webb back,
yep,
who was a top corner before he tore his ACL.
True.
They drafted some linebackers. They brought in Matt Elam with their first-round pick in terms of the
safety
spot. On paper, it looked as if they weren't going to have the type of issues that they had last night.
One other thing that I think caught me last night a little bit, and look, the Ravens won the Super Bowl last year based on the fact that they're very big and tall wide receivers, made plays in coverage on defensive players. We did not see that last night, and I think a big part of that is Anquan Boldin not being there. I know he doesn't have the speed he used to, but he's a guy with his physicality, could still make plays even when he was covered well. And I know Joe Flacco got the big contract, and people like to get really excited about guys that win Super Bowls. I saw a lot of bad throws last night. I saw a lot of deep throws overthrown. I saw some deep throws underthrown. I saw that terrible throw on the flat that got picked off when the linebacker undercut the coverage. It should have been a touchdown if he didn't drop the ball before the goal line. And they got his teammate hurt, by the way, who tried to recover the ball, and somebody dove into his knees. So I think the Ravens could struggle to be 500 this year. I could see them going 7-9, 8-8. I really could.
It wouldn't surprise me, especially after that performance last night. The other play that I would throw out there, you mentioned Anquan Boldin. How about Dennis Pitta? I mean, losing him in the middle of the field.
Great point.
Ed Dixon and Dallas Clark could not make any plays last night.
Big drop by Dallas Clark. Could have been a touchdown before the half. Big drop.
And Dixon couldn't hold on to the football as well.
201-939-4513. We'll have our picks later on in the show, by the way. I know we used to have Hanlon on Fridays, but we have a multi-part of our decision here. One, Friday show is usually very busy with the phone calls, so we don't want to take 15 minutes away from you guys calling in to put Pat on. We know he's entertaining, but Lance and I are also going to be interviewing him on the pregame show every time the Giants play on Sunday. So we don't want to repeat the interview. So maybe we'll think, maybe we'll try to get him in on a Tuesday or something like that.
A little bit earlier in the week.
Get a reaction to the game rather than previewing the game ahead.
I like that plan.
All right. I will email Pat Hanlon. Once he yells and screams at me, I will see if I can convince him to make a cameo appearance on Tuesdays.
Now, he has a very busy schedule, clearly, because, I mean, we were too less important for him in the preseason where he didn't bother to even show up.
Well, he will be there on Sunday, and I'm going to email him to confirm that time today. But we will be joined by Pat Hanlon live from the field at AT&T Stadium.
I'm glad he penciled us in, at least for now.
Well, not yet. He will later on today when I send the email with the time. 201-939-4513. Will is down in Atlanta, Georgia. Will, what's going on?
Yes, John, what's going on, fellas? How y'all doing, man?
Good to hear from you, Will. What's up?
Man, ready to get on this plane in a couple hours and go out to Dallas
nice.
And see my boys take care of business.
Very good.
I'm telling you, man. Yeah, absolutely, man. And John, I'm definitely going to go ahead and take your recommendation on that restaurant and try it out, man. The way you talk about that barbecue, I got to get some of that.
Now, here's the problem. I'm going to show up and the line's going to be out the door now. I'm sending too many people.
We need to make sure that John gets a 15% discount with everybody else that he's bringing.
I need a little sponsorship back here.
I'm telling you, man. Listen, a couple things. One, I'm hoping that some of that rubs off, man, on our receiving corps, because I know Peyton and Eli and their receiving corps got together this offseason and did some drills and everything. So I definitely hope that extends over, man, to our receiving corps. And secondly, you know, one of my major concerns
is I'm not too high on Darrell Scott being the second running back. You know, reason being, I mean, you know, initially I was high on him, you know, me being from Maryland, him coming out of Maryland. And, you know, he had a great preseason his rookie year where he had that 90-some-yard touchdown, and he had that that fake punt that he ran for a touchdown. But I really haven't seen too much more, you know, after that. And I really haven't seen him break too many tackles. You know, a good stat that I want to see is his broken tackles per carry. You know, what is that average?
Well, he only has 11 career regular season carries, so there's probably not a lot of them, Will.
I mean, we could even look at preseason. I mean, the list goes on and on. I just really, you know, I'm really looking forward to us bringing in that veteran running back. I want to see who that person is so we can go ahead and solidify that position.
You know, Will, it's funny. It was a funny moment with Kevin Gilbride yesterday when he spoke to the media. He was asked about Darrell Scott, and it was something to the effect of, well, you know, it didn't look like Darrell Scott was going to be on this team. Then Andre Brown gets hurt, and all of a sudden, Darrell Scott's on the roster. And Kevin Gilbride kind of grins, smiles, and goes, shows you how quickly fortunes can change. So I think, quite frankly, I think a lot of people in the organization are probably with you. They're not sure exactly what Darrell Scott can offer. He's been here a few years. He hasn't done a whole lot. He's had trouble holding on to the football, which we all know can get you in Tom Coughlin's doghouse extremely quickly, and it's tough to get out of it. So he'll have an opportunity this week because of the way the contract rules work in the league. He'll have an opportunity to show this team what he can do. And if he does something, maybe he'll stick for another week. If he doesn't, the Giants can go out on the free agent market next week, find another running back. They don't have to guarantee the contract for the whole year, and they'll find somebody else. But look, if Darrell Scott ever had a chance to stick with the Giants, the time is now. He's got to do something on Sunday. If he does something stupid, he's finished.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm hoping that I'm wrong. You know, because I like I said, I was high on him when he first got drafted to the Giants. But like you said, man, we'll see. I thank you guys for taking my call, all right?
Thanks for the call, Will. Appreciate it. Man, I'm telling you, I'm sending too many people the hard eight.
I'm not going to have to work out some business deal.
Well, the line's usually long to begin with. You got to wait a good 15 minutes to get into the place.
I mean, you're John Schmelk. You're going to tell me they don't move you to the front automatically?
In Dallas, they move me to the back.
Wow, I'm stunned. That's really a shocking development. We got to change that.
Maybe I can drop your name. See where that gets
you know, we'll see. That may move you a couple of steps backwards, actually.
By the way, I won't even be in the restaurant anymore.
Darrell Scott averaged 2.3 yards per carry when you break down his carries versus how much yardage he's had. He's had 11 carries for a total of 25 yards.
Even Lance can do that math.
So in terms of Will's question about how many tackles did he wind up shedding, wasn't an opportunity to shed much if you only tally 25 yards on 11 carries. And Will's right. When he came in, Darrell Scott, he had a very good preseason, and I think that elevated the expectations where fans believed, hey, this is a player that can maybe provide a spark on a third down or give the Giants a lift on special teams. Unfortunately, it didn't pan out that way. And I wouldn't say just because he lacked that playmaking ability when he got in, but injuries have held Darrell Scott back.
Yep.
The one player that I bring to mind when I think of Darrell Scott, I also throw in Ramsey's Barnett into the conversation.
And Gerald Jernigan.
Yeah, because all of these guys have had opportunities. And even when they have one productive game, the following week, they appear on the injury report.
They can't practice.
So it's hard to put much stock and faith in these guys.
Shows you how important health is in this league. All right, guys, we have four calls on the line. We're going to take those four. Lance and I will do our picks. And by the way, we're going to have Anita and Paul are in the mix now. They email me their picks, and they're eerily similar.
And Nele, too, if he gets around to providing those picks.
We need Nele's picks as well. And Dan Salamone, correct, one of our staff writers, too. We should really get to pick some Eisen, too. We should get Eisen involved here.
The more, the merrier.
As you put in your email the other day, the more people Lance can lose to in the pick competition, the better.
My track record speaks for itself.
JD's in Virginia. JD, what's going on?
What's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Good, JD.
I was wanting to know, is Mr. Pat Hanlon in?
Pat Hanlon will not. We just said this before, JD. Pat is in the building. He will not be joining us on Fridays this year because Lance and I are going to talk to him on the radio pregame show on Sunday. So we're going to see if we can get Hanlon coming down here on Tuesdays. And frankly, Tuesday is his easier day, too. There's no media availability. So we're going to see if we can get Pat down here on Tuesday's show, and we'll go from there.
Lies. All lies. Man, but no, first things first, I want to just say thank you very much for the show, Joe Port. It's highly enjoyable and highly definitely motivational because right now you're listening to a person who cannot wait for Sunday evening.
Well, thanks for listening.
Appreciate that.
And I just have one quick question.
Sure.
Are the Giants really that bad? because you listen to NFL Network, you listen to ESPN, you listen to commentators, oh my gosh, the Giants can't do this, the Giants can't do that, they don't have anybody healthy, everyone's dead and gone, and they happen to pick up some people playing Pee Wee League football, and I'm listening to this, and I'm like, I know that the Giants are not this bad. You see what I'm saying? And I don't know, maybe give me a little bit more optimism. Because it's like when you listen to reports and I'm just like, yeah, these are people that play football. And one, you still have Eli Manning. Two, you still have Hakeem Nicks. You still have Victor Cruz. You still have a stout offense. You still have a very good passing attack. In my opinion, the passing attack has improved with Murphy. You see what I'm saying?
All right, JD, I'm going to try to put you at ease here because it's very easy, like you said, to pick out some weaknesses and focus on them. Are there some weaknesses? Sure. Are there questions on the offensive line? No doubt about it. Do you worry about the secondary again this year and whether or not they can rush the passer consistently? Sure. Legitimate questions. Are the linebackers maybe below what most other teams have out there as their starters? Look, I think there are some legitimate concerns. However, you have a very, I guess I'll call it a high floor for this team because you have Eli Manning. You have Victor Cruz. You have Akeem Nicks. You have David Wilson. Your offense is going to be a top-five offense in this league because of the talent that they have. They're going to be explosive. They're going to score a lot of points. They're going to be excellent. On defense this year, they fortified their interior defensive line with a bunch of defensive tackles that can stop the run. You have Ancho Roll. Exactly. You have Ancho Roll at his old position at safety. You have Prince Amukamara possibly having a breakout year at corner. So, to me, there are more positives than negatives. That's why I have the Giants hanging out in that 9-10 win range. I think that's where they're going to land this year. And I think there's more positive than negative. The problem you have, and this is what Lance and I have talked a lot about the last couple of years, JD, the team's so inconsistent. They've had so many games the last 2 years where they've just looked god-awful, and you wonder if they're ever going to win another game. And I think that's sometimes what sticks in people's head is it jades their opinion towards the Giants because they just look so bad some weeks.
It's the, like basically last season I tell people it's a coulda, shoulda, woulda games because there were games that they pretty much left on the field that they should have been in. Honestly, they should have won the NFC East and honestly, they really had the opportunity to make it to the Super Bowl. I mean, that's just, you know, maybe a little favoritism, but there were those games, especially the second Redskins game and the Pittsburgh game and also the Philadelphia Eagles game.
Right.
That, you know, that basically stand out on my mind. But all in all, it's always to stay up, stay true, go big blue. Gentlemen, enjoy the day. Enjoy this trip. Please be safe because, you know, we need to hear y'all Monday morning.
Thanks, JD. We appreciate it.
Thanks, JD. Appreciate you weighing in. He's right. I mean, in terms of the inconsistency, I like to call it Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. That was my favorite term season in and season out. And, John, I'm looking back at last year's schedule. You know, you beat Carolina 36-7 on that Thursday night game, and then you go to Philly and you lose 19-17. You know, just the disparity in terms of the offensive production. You blow out the Saints 52-7, and then you go to Atlanta and you lose 34-0, and then you follow that up with a 33-14 loss at Baltimore. Those two games were obviously killers.
And then you beat Philly 42-7.
You know, up
Who's
and
showing
down,
up?
Up and down. It's very unpredictable.
It's like an elevator.
That's been the best description for this team the last couple of seasons. So, you know, if they could put together stretches where the offense doesn't come and go, then you have a lot more confidence in this team. But you've got to prove it.
Shakes is in Baltimore, Maryland. Shakes, good morning. How you doing, Pally?
Good morning, fellas. Good morning. It's a good day, man. It's good. It's the weekend started. It's Friday. Football is Sunday. Oh, man. Listen, I was watching the Raven game, of course, because I live in Baltimore. And, of course, everybody was watching it. It was the champs. And they didn't look like champs yesterday.
No.
I mean, they look flat. Like, they look real flat. And that's what kind of worried me. Like, they picked up good players. They really did. And, you know, I follow that. But it don't look like their chemistry is there. Like, I don't see their chemistry together like how they was last year. They moved as one unit. Yesterday, I didn't see that, so I'm kind of worried about us. Is our chemistry going to be okay?
Well, Shakes, I will go out on a limb here and tell you this. Neither the Giants or Cowboys will come out flat on Sunday night. Both these teams are going to be pumped for this game.
No, okay.
I hope so, man, because I'm going to be really into it. All right, my prediction score is Giants 34, Cowboys 31.
That's a good score. I like that.
Pull it out in a close one. It's going to be very evenly matched. And this is what I got to say to you, Prince. If you're listening, I hope you're listening, do not let Dez Bryant get comfortable in your castle. Please, do not let that guy get comfortable. Bump him, hit him, hit him hard. When you hit him, I mean, make him cry. I want him to shed tears like Eddie George did when Ray Lewis and Chris McAllister was hitting him. I want him to hurt. Please, Prince, don't let him get comfortable in your castle. All right, y'all.
Thanks, Shakes. Appreciate it. Well, keep in mind, I like the theory. Dez Bryant, a much larger human being than Prince Amukamara. You want to tell Ryan Mundy to go out there and make Dez Bryant hurt after he catches the ball? I'll buy that. Mundy's a big dude.
More likely that Mundy's going to rough up Dez Bryant than Prince Amukamara. I mean, you're talking about a wide receiver that, in terms of his height and his weight, 6'2", 222. He's a presence. Let's leave it at that.
He's a big fella. He's a big fella.
And he had a tremendous stretch towards the latter part of last season.
Last eight games, 800 yards receiving, 50 catches, 10 touchdowns. That's a good fantasy football season for an entire year for a lot of guys.
He could have taken the first half of the season off, and he still would have been able to provide decent amount of numbers to make his fantasy owners happy.
Two more calls before we say goodbye. Let's go to Andrew in New Jersey first. Andrew, what's going on, pal?
Shakes, I forgot to mention, we had also Coughlin and Parcells, Belichick, all at the same time, because Coughlin was a wide receiver coach.
Yep.
The rule for the show is you could have Paul Tatino, but you can't have Tatino and Fucinelli at the same time.
Same guy?
Too crazy.
Oh, too crazy. I could see that.
But I love them both. But the question I had last year, did Prince, did he get injured and miss part of the season? And was Corey Webster this year, is he switching sides?
No, but both guys are going to be on the same side. So Prince will play right cornerback and Corey will play left cornerback.
So Aaron Ross, he didn't beat Corey Webster out as a starter?
No, he did not.
Okay, so I'm psyched about the game. And Antrell Roll, they asked him about all the new players. And he said that even though they never played together, they've all played, you know, and started in games. But other than Justin Tuck and Prince, who was in and out, and Corey Webster, those three are the only players that are returning starters. Antrell Roll is really playing like a corner, and OC's gone, and I don't think JPP's going to start. So it's a whole turnover on the defense, except
That's
for
a great
those
point.
Three players. So I'm pretty worried about that. But I'm excited to see the matchup against Andre Ware and the Dez Bryant against Prince. And Len from Maryland will agree the defensive tackles. I'm excited. I think they're going to do a lot of damage. And my prediction is pretty much the same as Shakes. It's going to be high scoring. It's going to go right down to the wire. Thanks, guys.
All right, Andrew. Appreciate the call, man. I think you're going to have a game in the high 20s, low 30s. I'm with them on that.
The offense usually sometimes is ahead of the defense, I would say, when it comes to week one. I mean, we saw that last night in terms of the Broncos and the Ravens.
Look at the history with these two teams.
Oh, of course.
Score fest.
Always offensive clinics. And getting back to Andrew's point, I think he brings up a great point in terms of that you have a lot of new starters. However, I will say this. The front seven, I thought, had a lot of experience playing with one another in the preseason, John. More so than Antrell Roll and Ryan Mundy. That would be the only combo that I would put a question mark next to. But they're veteran players. They've been there. They've done that. So I don't know how concerned you have to be. But once again, it's not as if everybody was battling injuries during the preseason. Yes, they were missing a player here or there. But they've gotten these rotations down that it's not really going to be much of an adjustment period.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be any chemistry issues on defense. I think they'll be okay with that. I don't see that being a problem. Though, then again, last year, these guys played the whole year together. They're still in week 12 looking at each other like, oh, you got that? Who wants it? Who's supposed to be there? Oh, I'm supposed to be over the top. Who's supposed to cover him? I don't know. And they're looking at each other with their arms up like this, and you don't know what the heck's going on.
The one line you couldn't stand hearing each and every week, the miscue.
Oh, we had a miscommunication on that play. Oh, my goodness. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Dave in Rochester. Dave, I saved you because I know you like to close out the show. What's going on, Dave?
Fellas, good morning. Hey, Lance, I just wanted to see. I see you got my picture of Dottino the other day.
I did see that, and we're going to have to circulate that around social media.
Well, what are you talking about?
Dave went back to the archives and got an old photo of Paul Dottino.
Is it on Twitter?
Yes, I will show it to you.
Oh, hold on.
It's tremendous.
It's about 15 years old, I think. And Johnny, he's got the hair with the sideburns connected to the beard. Looks like he's got a helmet. It looks like one of Saddam Hussein's sons. And he looks tanless too, man. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's a good one. That is a good one. Dave, let me tell you, I'm not sure if Paul Dottino will ever talk to you ever again.
He may never. We have yet to show it to him, but I may need to have him take a glimpse of this, Dave, because it gave me plenty of giggles.
You know what he looks like? He looks like a weird combination of the Count from Sesame Street and Eddie Munster.
Count Chocula, man.
Yeah, that works too.
Well, you know he learned his ABCs on a legal pad because he wrote it out 25 million times.
Oh, that's great. Hey, just quickly with my question, is I think Dallas averaged about 433 yards or something against the Giants last year. Do you think, is that because, I mean, for this year I was thinking, and Witten did about 187, you guys said, with that last game. How did that happen? And then who's going to be watching? Is someone going to be eyeing Witten this game to make sure? I know Angelo Roll had commented this week. He's certain. He's like, we're going to keep an eye on him. But who's going to be in charge of taking care of him?
You know, that's a great question. I think you'll see a combination of Spencer Paysinger and Jaquan Williams covering him a lot. If he gets down into the seam area, you know, then the safeties will become a factor. So I think those are the guys that will probably be primarily responsible for Jason Witten.
So you don't think there'll be one guy, maybe Roll, just kind of eyeing him out?
Well, you know, it also depends what kind of defense you're running. If you're running a zone, then you're going to be in a zone. If you're running man-to-man, you're probably going to have to put a linebacker or a safety on him one-on-one. If you're going to put a safety on him, I think you'd probably see Roll on him man-on-man before you see Mundy on him man-on-man.
Very nice.
Thanks,
all right,
Dave.
Guys, thanks a lot. Talk to you later.
Dave. By the way, if you want to see that great picture of Paul Dottino, you can look at Lance Meadows' mentions on Twitter. By the way, it's at Lance Meadow, but M-E-D-O-W.
Oh, boy, you guys love this storyline. I may have to retweet it now.
It's
correct, there
M-E-D-
is no A.
If you retweet that, Paul will not be happy.
Well, that's the only way anybody's going to be able to see it. Think about it.
No, if you search at Lance Meadow, then they'll be able to see your reply to it, I think, right? Or his,
I don't think
or
I replied to it. I think I favorited it. I did not reply to Dave's text. Maybe I should reply to Dave's.
But if he sends the tweet to you and they search your name, won't it come up?
No, because it was just Dave just sent it to me. It's on my interaction page.
I see.
So, see, if I take the risk of retweeting it now, I may never speak to Paul Dottino for the next couple of weeks.
If you
which may not be a bad thing, actually.
if you retweet it, but don't put his Twitter name in there,
well,
that
I don't
might
think
go under
Dave,
the radar.
Dave did not include his Twitter name.
Oh,
and so I don't even think Paul Dottino, believe it or not, do you know that he doesn't even follow me, I think, on Twitter?
Is that true? Doesn't follow you?
He does not follow me.
I think we need to bring this up on the pregame show
we
on Sunday.
We definitely have to bring this up on the pregame show. So as long as he doesn't follow me, he'll never see the tweet.
That's a
Giants Nation, though, you got to keep it quiet. If I retweet it, I don't want to hear that this gets back to Paul Dottino. Because then you're going to create some beef between the two of us.
All right. Want to go through some picks here?
Let's do it.
All right. We picked out – we were going to do the same way we did it last year, so we're getting more people involved, which is the fun part.
Yes, because John wants to pat himself on the back a couple of more times. He doesn't just want to beat the living you-know-what out of me. He wants to do it around the Giants facility.
The more people I can embarrass on a weekly basis, the better. That's the way I look at it. I think that's fair, right?
It keeps the morale up.
All right. So we have we picked four games to select as for everybody to pick, and then we have our wild card game on our upset special. So first things first – we'll go to the required games. We pick some of the great matchups from this week. First, Saints-Falcons, which I think is a great game to start off that NFC South, just as great as the Giants and Cowboys in the NFC East. It's in New Orleans, which to me is what makes this game even more interesting. And if you think the Giants-Cowboys is going to be high-scoring, well, this game could be in the 40s. I could see 80 total points between these two teams, Lance. And I think the Saints, with Sean Payton back on the sideline, trying to resurrect that franchise after a bad year last year, I think the Saints figure out a way to eke out a victory at home against the Atlanta Falcons.
They're going to be extremely motivated. I agree with you, John. The fact that they lost him for the entire season because of the Bounty Gate scandal, it was a down year for the Saints. They've also revamped their defense. I'm not going to say that they're going to be a shutdown unit, but they're certainly going to be improved compared to how they performed last season. They're probably going to split this season series, but I like New Orleans at least winning this opener.
And Nile, who also is picking games with us, also likes the Saints in that contest. And Anita and Paul agree. They both like the San Francisco 49ers going scratch, of course. They are the favorites in that game, by the way.
You mean, wait, that's the Niners-Packers
game. I'm sorry. Yeah. They both like the Falcons in that game.
They both like the Falcons.
Saints, by the way, 3 points favorites in that game, just FYI.
That's surprising. I would think Atlanta would be the favorite.
That generally means on a neutral site that would be a pick 'em game. Usually, for home field, you usually give them the 3 points. 201-939-4513. Let's go to our next game. We have the Niners and the Packers. That game in San Francisco. Green Bay, obviously the more offensive-oriented team. Colin Kaepernick in year number two as their starter. And the 49ers are slight favorites in this contest. And I really thought about taking the Packers in this game, but the Niners' defense really did a good job against Green Bay last year, and Colin Kaepernick ran the ball like mad on them. The Packers played a lot of man-to-man defense. They covered the Niners deep down the field, provided a lot of free running room for Colin Kaepernick, scrambling with the football. They also run the ball well on Green Bay before. I just don't know if the Packers have gotten their act together on defense yet. And their defense last year was so bad. I have trouble picking them in this game. I'm going to go with the 49ers. Both Anita and Dettino pick the 49ers as well. But I know you think the Green Bay Packers might have a little bit of chance here.
I do like the Packers in this game. I'll be honest with you. I am not sold on San Francisco this season. I think they're going to be a wild card team. I think Seattle's going to win the NFC West. My concern with San Francisco this season has nothing to do with their defense, and their defense is probably going to win a lot of games for them. But who outside of Anquan Boldin and maybe Vernon Davis is going to provide some weapons for Colin Kaepernick? You know, they don't have a nice crew of receivers because Crabtree's lost because of the torn Achilles tendon. Kyle Williams, and Giants fans should know about Kyle Williams because of the mishaps that he had in the NFC Championship game a couple of years ago, is lining up as the number two receiver. And he is an unproven commodity. And Frank Gore is getting up there in age. So I am concerned about San Francisco being able to put points on the board. And Aaron Rodgers is not going to light up this San Francisco defense. But you figure he's at least going to have some success. So that's why I'm going to lean towards Green Bay to at least start this season off with a win.
Game number three, we stick in the division. This is a Monday night football game this week. Remember, we have two of them. The early game is Redskins and Eagles. I like the Redskins in this game at home against Philadelphia. I think they're going to take a little while to get used to Chip Kelly's system. I think Chip Kelly's going to be a great coach in this league for a long time, by the way. I think the Eagles are going to be better off for having him. I just don't think Michael Vick fits what they're trying to do there in terms of making quick decisions with the football, and I think that's going to catch up with Philadelphia. I think the Redskins have a little bit of a down year, but I like them to open the season at home against the Eagles.
I'm going to go with the Redskins, too. I also don't think Michael Vick is going to last 16 games, John. I think that would be another red flag that I would hold up as to why the Eagles may have an up-and-down year. But Chip Kelly is going to catch a lot of these NFC East opponents off guard initially. Then they'll be able to make the adjustments once they have more film. That's going to be the key in terms of at least solving the Eagles. Redskins have question marks regarding RG3's knee, but they've got enough talent around him they can lean on Alfred Morris for the win.
Love Pierre Garçon having a big year this year. I think he could really explode and become a Pro Bowl-type wide receiver. Redskins for Dettino, Redskins for Anita Marks, and then our man Nile and our man Dan Salomon both like the Eagles in an upset on Monday night, so we'll see what happens there. Final game that was a requirement for everybody to pick, that's Seahawks-Panthers. The Panthers hosting Seattle. Russell Wilson in year two as their quarterback. Cam Newton had a slow start to last season, but came on in the second half. Actually, only a three-point spread in this game, believe it or not. We only pick winners and losers, obviously. So I actually think the Panthers could upset the Seahawks in this game. The Seahawks are not the same team away from their home building. I think the Panthers are a lot better than people think. I think Cam Newton can do a little bit. I worry about the Panthers' defense slowing down the Seattle offense. I could see Marshawn Lynch having a big game running the football, and that's my big fear in this game. But teams are very good usually opening up in their home stadium. For that reason, I'm going to go with the Carolina Panthers.
Well, I hope to gain some leverage on you, at least with this contest. I like Seattle in this game. I mean, how could you go against that Seattle defense? They arguably have the best secondary in the league in terms of their two corners and their two safeties. And Carolina may improve from last season, John, but you know, once again, outside of Steve Smith, who's scaring you? Who's drawing attention away from Steve Smith?
Brandon LaFell?
No. Unproven.
No, he's not.
And Dominic Hickson hasn't stayed healthy during the course of his career.
He hasn't.
That's my biggest
issue. Fair.
And what about the running back situation? Jonathan Stewart starting off on PUP. D'Angelo Williams has been an unstable running back because he's been unhealthy throughout the course of his career.
Very kind use of unstable.
Well, it's true.
He hasn't rushed for 1,000 yards in 3 seasons.
So, there you go. A lot more question marks than answers.
And everybody else likes the Seahawks as well, except for Neela, who was with me picking the Carolina Panthers in an upset. Our wild card games, a lot of cowardly selections this year.
Including you, by the way.
Well, I picked it this morning because I was annoyed that everybody else went with these like very, very cheesy picks. Both Anita, Paul, I take that back. Both Paul and Lance and Salomon all picked the Colts to win at home against Oakland. Well, wow, really. Huge shocker there, guys. I'm not wasting people's time even breaking down that game. Nele shows some guts, picks the Bengals as his wild card game. I like that. That's actually an upset special, and uses it as wild card.
Well, I did pick that game also.
Well, we'll get there. Okay. But he used that as wild card game. That's guts. I like that. And just to annoy you guys, Anita picked the Broncos last night, by the way, as her wild cards. You know, so that wasn't exactly an upset special either. And just to annoy you and to play along, how about the Patriots to beat the Buffalo Bills? Let's try to be a little braver next week with the wild card games, okay?
Well, that goes across the board.
I will include that in the email this year, and I will show derision towards people who picked easy wild card
Very
games.
Good.
Finally, upset special. 4 of us actually picked the Bengals. Me, you, Paul, and Anita, all picked the Bengals, and they are underdogs playing in Chicago against, you know, Trestman's first game as a regular season head coach. The Bengals, I think, are the best team in the AFC North. I like their team a lot, and I think both of us are in agreement. I think the Bengals can win 11 games this year, and I think they'll start the season with a win, even if it's in Chicago.
The Bengals are my pick to go to the Super Bowl in the AFC. That's how highly I think of this team. I think their defense is tremendous in terms of the depth and the fact that they really are going to get to the quarterback this season. And offense, how could you not like the double tight ends that they have? And Giovanni Bernard, who is going to provide a big burst in terms of balancing off of Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. So Cincinnati, to me, is definitely in that 11-win range, maybe even more.
And Dan and Nele, with their upset special this week, they're going with the J-E-T-S. Jets,
oh,
Jets, Jets. How about that? That's guts. I like the new two participants.
Boy, they must
in the
have dug really deep in terms of picking the Jets in that contest.
Love it. I don't know about Geno Smith and game one of his NFL career against Darrell Revis and company.
And Deshaun Goldson. I mean, it's not as if the Bucs are throwing a bunch of nobodies out there.
That could be a problem.
Wow.
And I think the Jets will probably be a little bit better than some people think this year. Honestly, I'd like the upset pick special more if Sanchez was starting instead of Geno Smith, because I think Geno Smith's going to struggle a little bit as a rookie, which is not an insult to Geno Smith. He could be a great quarterback in a few years, but, you know, he came out of a spread system in college. He's trying to adjust to the NFL. It's tough, but that is gutsy. Got to give him that. It is gutsy.
And when they have 2 losses, when we go through the standings on Tuesday morning, I don't know if you'll still be referring to it as gutsy.
Lance, final thought, Giants, Cowboys, and I also going to require in your final thoughts a season prediction for the New York Football Giants so we can get it on record this year.
I think they're a 10-win team. That's what I've been saying.
Will they win
since
the division
the start of training
with 10
camp.
Games?
I believe they will. But I also think that 2 teams this season from the NFC East are going to make the playoffs. I think we're going to get a wild card.
How about this? I agree with you. 10 wins, win the division. They will finish tied for the division lead with 10 games with the Dallas Cowboys, who will not make the playoffs with 10 wins.
So the Cowboys are going to lose out on a tiebreaker situation.
The way I look at it is that the Cowboys have had a lot of talent for a lot of years. They always figure out a way to screw things up and come up short. Why would that change now? I think they're just as talented. I think they can win 10 games. I think the Giants will do better in the division this year, and they will win the tiebreak with the Cowboys, win the NFC East. But I think the NFC is so strong this year, Dallas Cowboys will not make the playoffs despite winning 10 games.
Well, it may not be the Cowboys, but I could definitely see a 10-win team missing out in terms of making the playoffs, because to me, there is tremendous depth in this NFC.
Well, here's the thing. You figure the Niners and Seahawks are both going to be in, right? And you figure both those teams are going to win at least 10 games. That's my opinion. In the North, you figure the Packers are going to win that division with 10, at least, okay? Then you go to the NFC South. Saints and Falcons. Are both those two teams winning 10 games? Are the Bucs going to break out this year? Is Josh Freeman going to take that next step? Then you have the NFC. Who knows? Maybe the Bears break out with Trestman. Vikings made the playoffs last year. How about them? You love the Lions. There's so much depth. And even the Rams, I think, are going to be a much better team this year. There are a ton of teams that I think could be in the mix in the playoffs. And I'm not sure if 10 wins. Look, You take 10 wins and you say, I'll take them, I'll go to the bank, I'll take my chances. But I'm not sure if it guarantees a playoff berth this year. I'm really not sure.
And don't forget, there were teams last season that did quite well and got 10 wins and missed out on the playoffs. The Bears won 10 games last season.
Got Lovie Smith fired. It's hard to fire a coach when they go 10-6.
I would say just about every division in the NFC, you can make an argument that they're three teams deep within the playoff conversation.
NFC East, certainly. NFC South, borderline.
Well, Tampa Bay, though, can be in the conversation of a wild card.
I don't disagree with that.
The North, Bears, Lions, and Packers. I'm not sold on the Vikings this year, but you probably can even make a case
for
the Vikings.
You can even sub the Vikings in for the Lions there if you want. I think the Lions might be. I mean, they only won 4 games last year.
But they're going to get their pass rush back this season.
I know. And then it depends how much you believe in St. Louis in the West. I think the NFC, much stronger conference this year than the AFC. I don't think it's close.
Oh, the AFC, there are some divisions where it's basically the division winner, and who knows?
Well, there are flaws everywhere. I think the best team in the AFC, and I'll give you my Super Bowl pick while we're at it now. We might as well. I'm going to go Broncos and 49ers for my Super Bowl pick, and I think the Broncos win the Super Bowl this year. That's my prediction. I think they're by far the best team in the AFC. I think the Patriots have a lot of flaws. We talk about all their weapons they've lost on offense. I think the Texans have a lot of flaws, the big one being when they can't run the football. I don't think Matt Schaub is good enough to bring his team to where they need to go to win the Super Bowl. I don't think the Colts are quite ready yet. I think they're close. I don't think their defense is there yet where they can make a serious run at the Super Bowl. No one else in the AFC East scares me. I don't think the Steelers and Ravens are good enough this year to really make a lot of noise. And I think the Bengals might actually be maybe the third best team in the conference, to be quite honest with you. I know that's crazy. It's the Cincinnati Bengals, but they might be, after the Broncos and the Patriots.
The Patriots still have some question marks, though.
I agree.
I know they look good in the preseason, but they've got a young nucleus of receivers, and let's see how much they lean on the running game.
Can Gronkowski even make it back?
Correct. I like the Bengals over the Falcons.
In the Super Bowl?
Correct.
You're giving the Cincinnati Bengals their first Super Bowl.
I'm very high on the Bengals this season.
It
has nothing to do with HBO's Hard Knocks. I know we've seen a lot of this team because they've gotten some national exposure, but you look on paper, this offense is dangerous because it's not just A.J. Green. It goes way beyond A.J. Green.
I really like that Super Bowl pick, Lance. I really like that pick.
And the Falcons, you know, they haven't fallen off. They substituted Michael Turner for Steven Jackson. I'm concerned about their defense. I think O.C. gives them somewhat of a pass rush, but losing John Abraham is going to really hurt them.
I think the Falcons will make it to the NFC Championship game.
So you have them losing to the Niners. Yeah. So a rematch, essentially.
Yeah.
Wow.
I could also see the Seahawks being there against the Falcons, but I think the Falcons would beat the Seahawks, especially if they played them in Atlanta. If the Falcons get the Seahawks in Atlanta, the Falcons win that game, and they would go to the Super Bowl.
Well, the Falcons held on and beat Seattle this past season.
In fact, to me, the regular season for Atlanta is very important. If they have to go on the road to Seattle or San Francisco or both in the postseason, very difficult for them to make it all the way. But if they can host throughout the NFC playoffs, I'll tell you what, your Super Bowl prediction for the NFC might very well come true.
That's why it's very important that they hold off New Orleans and win this division.
Yeah, and win their 12 games so they finish ahead of both the Niners and the Seahawks in the NFC.
Correct.
Final thought for Sunday night. I didn't get that from you.
Well, I mean, I think we covered just about every aspect of this game, but I think at the end of the day, I'm not too concerned about the offense in this contest because of all the question marks on the Dallas defense. To me, this could be a statement game for the Giants defense because they're going up against an offense that is going to go three wide. You have a lot of weapons. You have a good running game. Can the pass rush return? And can the Giants get back to the style of defense, John, where they win the battle at the line of scrimmage?
I'm with you. Exploit the Dallas weakness on the offensive line. Get to Tony Romo. You pressure him. He'll make some mistakes. You win the football game, and it all comes down to turnovers and takeaways. If you win the turnover battle, you're probably going to win this game down there and prevent the big play. You can't let Dez Bryant and Miles Austin run free in that secondary. We've seen it before, and it doesn't work. I mean, the Giants look like they had that game in Dallas last year in the bag. The Cowboys scored 24 straight points in the second half to almost win it. So I think high scoring, I think close, I think a field goal in the fourth quarter wins it. And it should be a heck of a lot of fun. That's the bottom line. And by the way, you can hear Lance and I and Paul Dottino and Jeff Fiegels on the pregame show on WFAN starting at 6:30 p.m. That's on 660 AM and 101.9 WFAN FM. And then 2 hours after the game, Bob Pop and I will be in the locker room. And Lance and Jeff, then we'll take it the rest of the way from our studios on Hudson Street in New York City. So, Lance, appreciate the time. We'll talk to you on Sunday, all right?
Look forward to it.
Everybody, have a great weekend. Make sure you stay tuned to Giants.com later on in the day. And tomorrow, we'll have our preview report up as Paul and I give an in-depth preview of the game on Sunday. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy your weekend. Week 1 NFL season. Doesn't get any better than this. Have a great one, folks.